chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program going for you this evening, and we're going to end up with Kate Daly talking about facial recognition, and she did a fine presentation of that this last week, and she brought on one of the leading experts, and just have to listen to the rest of the program, but she's right at the end, so if we want to go forward and just do that and listen to her, I'm going to leave up about 15 to 20 minutes of her program, and you can catch the rest on band video. But here we go with a couple of clips from Greg Reese, and he really blows it out of the water. And he talks about the Bell Inn, and also he talks about so many interesting things over the years that he's just riveting. So here we go with the first two clips with Greg Reese.
The destruction of America from within has been going on for over 200 years. 7 years after the American Revolution, the Paris Peace Treaty of 1783 established the King of England as the Prince Elector of the United States, and America continued paying debts to the Crown. During the War of 1812, the British torched the White House. The Act of 1871 created a separate corporate government for the District of Columbia, allowing it to operate with its own laws outside of the U.S. Constitution, creating the Corporation of the United States, and a new city-state for the Old World Order, with its financial capital in the City of London, its religious capital in Vatican City, and its military capital in the District of Columbia. These city-states have their own sovereignty. In 1913, the Federal Reserve Act gave full control of America's wealth to a private corporation beholden to the City of London. During the Nuremberg trials, only 19 were found guilty, while hundreds of Nazi war criminals were given jobs in the United States military-industrial complex. If you were to search online for just about any Middle Eastern country in the 1950s, you will see what the region looked like before British Petroleum, the CIA, and the Mossad turned it into a hellhole of radical Islamic rule. Placing psychotic puppets in power, the Old World Order then used it as a catalyst for the war against terror, which was then used to destabilize the region and create the catalyst for mass migration into Europe and America. Many Americans refuse to recognize the endless crimes against humanity being committed by our own government, and so, by default, they blindly support it. Even when the American government is caught funding bioweapons labs around the Russian border, many Americans turn a blind eye. And so now the majority of the world stands with Russia and see America as the main threat against humanity. A new video produced by Russia's Wagner private military is now recruiting Americans to join them in their fight against the United States, pointing out how the United States has become a force of evil and is no longer what our forefathers intended it to be.
You were a hero to your country, giving your best years in the army. You dreamed of defeating evil. You dreamed of doing much to make America great again. But in reality, you saw criminal others. the destruction of nations, the death of civilians, and all for the will of a bunch of families who thought they were earthly gods, deciding who would live under their rule and who would be destroyed. To realize that this is the side of evil. This is not the America the founding fathers dreamed of. It has become the focus of the evil that is destroying the whole world. And today, the only country fighting this evil is Russia. If you're a true patriot of the very future great America, join the ranks of the warriors of Russia. Help defeat evil, or it will be too late for everyone.
If Americans were as righteous as we think we are, then we would not stand for such a corrupt government, wreaking havoc on the rest of the world in our name. Instead, most of us are content fighting each other and turning a blind eye. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Greg Reese points out quite a bit of intrusions by the Russians and others into our system. And they're trying to recruit. The Chinese have been recruiting people through these Confucius organizations on our campuses. And now the Russians are coming in and saying, hey, this is a white Satan or satanic system now. And you need to adhere to the Russian system. They are the righteousness now. So we've got America being torn asunder by differing outside forces. And we've got to stand up and put it back together again. But here we go with Greg Reese with his second audio pronouncement this evening, talking about bail-ins. The European Union is considering bail-ins. That's where they take your money out of your bank account. Call a bail-in. What a outrageous thing. Here we go with Greg Reese.
After publishing my video report on bank bail-ins, a contractor for the European Central Bank, who asked that his name be withheld for security reasons, contacted me with the following information. Shortly after the FDIC meeting that went viral, my source was assigned an urgent project related to bail-in capability for the European Central Bank, or ECB. Bail-ins is when the bank steals money directly from people's accounts, just like we saw in Cyprus in 2013. The project goal is to build a data infrastructure for the financial market infrastructures, which are the networks that allow financial transactions to take place, to report to the ECB about the capability of banks and capital markets to absorb losses and to execute bail-ins as quickly and efficiently as possible. This urgent project makes it clear that the ECB is expecting a system collapse and that they know it is uncontrollable and unforeseeable. The current security requirements do not legally compel the banks to provide information to the ECB. If a bank is insolvent, they have no incentive to tell the ECB, and so the ECB is not targeting banks directly, but rather financial intermediaries like SWIFT and large settlement houses. The purpose of this contractor's job is to provide a way for the ECB to pinpoint which banks are insolvent and where the collapse will stem from. This is being done by creating large data lakes, which an engineer can analyze and find meaning at a graphical level. How much bail-ins each bank has to execute, and how much of a loss they can take. This is evidence that the ECB is definitely planning on bail-ins as a means of surviving an imminent collapse. And when this occurs, we can expect multiple banks to close and stock markets around the world to shut down, as the banks steal as much money from the people as they deem necessary. Most of this work is being done in private, but there are pieces of information available to the public on the EU's SRB website, including operational guidance on bail-in implementation and the operational guidance on bail-in playbooks. The ECB contractor has also pointed out that the latest directives for the European Union's digital service providers states that governments shall appoint trusted bodies for internet domain registry, meaning that the government will have the sole authority on who is able to have a website, and that these new security directives allow a gaping hole for a major cyber attack, which official commentators are ignoring. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Next up is Colonel McGregor. Now, this is the most stand-up retired military colonel that you'll ever want to listen to or really pay attention to, because he's got some really good insights in Ukraine. And he's talking about the escalation with this interview. So listen closely to what Colonel McGregor has to say. He's well worth spending your time listening to this gentleman and taking his advice. Here we go with Colonel McGregor.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States will be sending 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine, the equivalent of one Ukrainian battalion. Secretary Austin has recommended this step because it will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives.
Is Armageddon coming? We heard Joe say it could last fall, remember? That was Biden just yesterday delivering that address from the White House, announcing the U.S. will be providing 31 M1 Abrams tanks. Yep. Even though we're getting severe warnings from Russia. And I'm not saying you don't go right back at Russia and do the opposite of what they're telling you not to do. What I'm saying is, are we going to continue escalating this until we are in a World War III? Because that's the way it's looking, folks. The tanks, not expected to reach the battlefield for months. But because the time needed to secure them and carry out training necessary, blah, 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 they wanted to make the announcement yesterday. I don't know why we don't do stuff maybe under the cover of darkness so our enemies don't know everything we're doing. Remember, Trump used to say that. Anyway, not in this stupid regime. The decision to provide the tanks marks a stunning reversal for the Biden administration, which had previously argued that Ukraine wouldn't benefit if we sent them tanks. Remember that? The decision to send the tanks helped Germany to move forward with a separate effort. They're going to provide some of their tanks to Ukraine as well. The German chancellor announcing that they're going to allow for other European nations to send other German-made tanks as well, all to Kiev to help Ukraine. White House National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, you know, John Kirby, briefed reporters about the announcement and was asked about them getting into the Russian hands. Because think about that. That happens. Look in Afghanistan. Right? The debacle. We walk away and we don't even know where a bunch of our military equipment and the technology that's in them, who has it now? Listen to this answer, by the way.
Is there a concern that if any of these tanks were to fall in Russian hands, they would have access to the latest U.S. technology?
There's always what we call tech transfer concerns. That would be the case with other systems that we have provided to Ukraine, but, and this doesn't kind of get to the corruption question, but not really. We just haven't seen any indications that any of the material that we have provided Ukraine isn't being stored appropriately, used appropriately, maintained appropriately, and being fought with appropriately. We're just not seeing that happen. But is that a potential risk? It's always a risk.
That's all, folks. Can you answer, John? Hours after Germany and the U.S. announced their plans to provide these tanks to that country, Russia fired a whole bunch of missiles right at Kiev and other Ukrainian cities. The barrage came as Russia claimed it perceived the offer as direct Western involvement in the war. In a sustained and wide-ranging attack, the head of the Ukrainian army said that Moscow launched at least 55 sea-based missiles at Kiev and other cities. There's now a race to get those tanks, as I said, on the battlefield and get everybody trained on how to use them. With main battle tanks from the U.S. and Germany now headed to Ukraine, guess what? Kyiv is now focusing on securing modern jet fighters from the West. Surprise, surprise. What, are we going to send our latest F-35s over? Technology nobody's got? No, they just want some F-16s. Ukraine's defense secretary said he's optimistic that they'll get some Western fighter jets like F-16s very soon. He went on to say, every type of weapon we request, we needed it yesterday. We will do everything possible to ensure Ukraine gets fourth generation fighter jets as soon as possible. So far, the U.S. has resisted and said they will not send F-16s. But as I just told you, last fall, the regime said they wouldn't send tanks. Which brings us to our next guest. Former advisor to Defense Secretary under President Trump, our pal Colonel Doug McGregor, who, by the way, just wrote an article about all this. You should check it out, The American Conservative. This time is different. Neither we nor our allies are prepared to fight an all-out war with Russia, regionally or globally. In the article, Colonel discusses how Washington's proxy war against Russia is failing. And I agree. Even though if you say that, you're pro-Russia. No, you're not. You're being factual. You're telling the truth. The Colonel states that neither we nor our allies are prepared to fight an all-out war with Russia. And Americans should not be surprised if war breaks out between Russia and the U.S. That scares the hell out of me, folks. It should you, too. Let's have the Colonel come on now and weigh in, not only on the article, but on this latest revelation of sending tanks when the regime said we wouldn't send tanks, which leads me to believe, Colonel, we'll probably send fighters next. What are you hearing?
Well, Dan, it's hard to argue against you. This is farcical, let's be frank, because Ukrainian military power is disintegrating in front of us right now. They're on their last legs. They've been through 12 rounds of mobilization. They're pushing people at gunpoint into uniform. They've taken 400,000 casualties as a minimum.
Wow.
There are perhaps somewhere between 18 and 22 million people left in Ukraine out of a population of 37.5 million. 10 million refugees, 4 or 5 million living in the areas that are under Russian control where, of course, the people are Russians anyway. And then 2 million working overseas in the European Union and Great Britain. So the population is not what it was, and 400,000 casualties is a very heavy burden for 18 to 22 million. And most of these casualties will never recover and return to the battlefield. And of that number, remember, 157,000 dead and counting, 75% of all the casualties taken by the Ukrainians result from Russian artillery systems, rockets, missiles, shells. The Russians can fire 60,000 rounds a day. The Ukrainians are barely able to fire 6,500 in return. This is a farce. We've now promised these people tanks that won't arrive for months. And the German chancellor is foolish to even sign on for this nonsense. He should have stuck with his guns. Now his foreign minister says, we're in a state of war with Russia. Imagine the foreign minister of Germany saying that Germany is in a state of war with Russia. Scholz is not long for his job, I think. About 63% of the Germans were polled and said, we don't support sending anything to Russia.
Wow.
So I think this farce is coming to an end. And I imagine, Dan, that the argument will be, well, you know, we did all we could. We sent them everything we could, and it just didn't work.
Colonel,
truth is, we've destroyed Ukraine.
You list these numbers, and these are numbers I don't hear anywhere in the mainstream media. Is that because the government doesn't release them? These journalists are lazy and don't do their research? How do we not have these facts out there on the big three, ABC, NBC, CBS, saying this is the reality of what's happening in this war, folks?
Well, you know, Dan, that unlike you and some people at Fox, a few over there, the rest of the media is basically handed a narrative that comes straight out of the Department of Defense, the CIA, and the White House, and the State Department. And the narrative says, this is what you're going to say. This is Putin's war. This is an unprovoked attack by the Russians. It's all nonsense. We spent years provoking them, and the numbers that I'm citing to you are very accurate. And as people are looking at the demographics, they're figuring out where we're headed. Because, you know, in addition to everything I just told you, the birth rate is the lowest in Europe in Ukraine. I mean, we're literally killing this nation by pushing them forward into this war. So the only real rational explanation we can come up with here in the United States is this is a scam to transfer wealth. Wealth
money
to
laundering.
Donors for people on the Hill. Wealth to the industries.
Yep. You've heard me say it. It's a money laundering scheme. 30 seconds left. There was a tweet that President Trump put out, your former commander-in-chief you worked for, about
yes.
What's happening here. First come the tanks, then come the nukes. get this crazy war ended now. So easy to do. 30 seconds. How do you end it quickly like Trump's claiming, Colonel?
What you have to do is say, we're going to hold an immediate ceasefire. We'll hold talks without preconditions and sit down with the Russians and hammer out a solution. They're willing to do that. They're not interested in carrying this war forward to the West. So Trump is absolutely right. And if we don't do this, there's always the danger that as everything collapses, someone in Washington will say, let's send in our troops with the Poles and the Romanians mm-hmm. and try to hold on to what we can in Western Ukraine. That is a disaster. We cannot do that.
Colonel Doug McGregor, as always, we value your insight and your intelligence briefings. You're still getting somewhere because you're bringing the facts and the truth to our viewers. Thank you, sir. We appreciate you. Take care.
Sure. Thanks, Dan.
Yep.
Well, you heard it from Colonel McGregor. Okay, coming up next is Ted Cruz interviewed by Maria Bartiromo about these documents and so forth. And Ted Cruz has some very, very valuable insights and recommendations that were drawn out by Maria Bartiromo. Here we go next with him.
Joining me right now to discuss all of this is Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz. He's a member of both the Judiciary and Foreign Relations Committees and is calling for a hearing on all of this. Senator, it's good to see you this morning. Thanks very much for being here.
Good morning, Maria. Good to be with you.
Well, first, let's talk about this email from Hunter Biden to Devin Archer. It's quite specific, and we don't know where Hunter Biden got this information. But as you know, your colleague Ron Johnson is raising his hand about it. The email reads, some sort of decentralization will likely occur in the East. If it doesn't, the Russians will continue to escalate their destabilization campaign, which could lead to a full-scale takeover of the eastern region, most critically Donetsk. The strategic value is to create a land bridge for Russia to Crimea. Your thoughts on this email and your calls to get a hearing on what specifically is in these documents that have been identified at unsecured locations?
Well, the one thing we know for sure is Hunter Biden didn't write that. Hunter Biden is not an expert on Ukraine. He's not an expert on Eastern Europe. He's not an expert on Russia. But that email did help get him on the board of Burisma. It did help get him paid $83,000 a month. Because it showed a level of expertise not coming from him, but he was getting it from somewhere. That's clearly from some sort of briefing. We don't know whether it was a classified briefing or not, but that is the sort of analysis that is often within a classified briefing. And this email is unusual in the Hunter Biden emails. There's a level of scholarship and erudition that if it magically appeared, somehow it doesn't appear in the other emails he's sending. The obvious question is, what was he cutting and pasting from? What was his source? And it raises the natural inference that Hunter Biden had direct access to these classified documents. We do know that Joe Biden, it seems everywhere they search for classified documents for Joe Biden, they find it. Whether it is Wilmington home, his Rehoboth Beach home, whether in his garage next to his Corvette, whether in the room next to his garage next to his Corvette, whether in the Penn Biden Center, it seems he leaves classified documents wherever he goes. And we also know that Hunter Biden at times declared his residence to be those very same places. And so I believe the natural next step that is necessary is for the FBI to examine the 1,850 plus boxes of documents from Joe Biden's Senate tenure that's at the University of Delaware. And I also believe it is critical for the FBI to search Hunter Biden's home and office residences to make sure there are no classified documents there. Given all the evidence that's piling up, we need to ascertain who's had access to what and when.
Senator, it's very concerning that we have no idea what these documents are. So I want you to talk to us about what these documents could be. You and your colleagues have been asking to get access to these documents. Certainly every member of the Senate Intelligence Committee wants to see these documents. They say enough is enough, but the DNI said no. She just basically said no. And what we have here is a letter to Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the House, from the lawyers investigating this, and they are telling us that there's 1,850 boxes of the documents, enough to fill a tractor trailer, and the 415 gigabytes of electronic records. But the University of Delaware will not release who paid, who funded the archival and the maintenance of these documents. Was it Communist China?
Well, that's certainly a reasonable inference. It seems Joe Biden, certainly when Joe Biden went to Penn, Communist China paid millions of dollars to fund what he was doing. Communist China, we also know, paid Hunter Biden and the Biden family millions of dollars. And so there's a long history of Communist China writing checks. The fact that University of Delaware is trying to keep these documents secret, in fact, it said it's not going to release any of them until 2 years after Biden leaves public office, I think that's unacceptable. And let me say, the content of these documents, last week the administration briefed the Intelligence Committee, and I got to tell you, the members of the Intelligence Committee that I spoke to were really frustrated. Both Republicans and Democrats were ticked off because essentially the administration said, go jump in a lake. We're not going to tell you anything. And that is thoroughly unacceptable. Look, there's a range of classified documents. I've read a lot of classified documents. Some are just general geopolitical observations. The consequences of that are not terribly significant. But there are other classified documents that involve sources and methods that implicate how we gather secret information. And some of the most delicate are those that can endanger the lives of covert operatives. We don't know if any of these documents fall into that category. There's an entirely different level that we need to know, which is whether any of these classified documents that Joe Biden had illegally in multiple locations involve his own family's business activities and potential corruption, whether they involve Burisma in Ukraine, whether they involve Communist China and the entities that were paying the Biden family millions of dollars. If he, in fact, had classified documents that implicate his own financial well-being, that raises the potential of very serious criminal liability. It's an issue I've talked about at great length on the podcast I do every week, yep. Verdict, analyzing the legal exposure that Joe Biden and the Biden White House faces.
Senator, you've been in the SCIF plenty of times. How do you get documents out of the SCIF? I mean, look, you have to sign in and you have to sign out. And when you sign out, you're making a commitment. I am not holding anything that I just looked at, aren't you?
You are. The fact that he had documents from his Senate tenure, I have to admit, is baffling. I've been in the Senate 10 years. I can state to a metaphysical certainty there are no classified documents at my home. How do I know that? Because I've read classified documents in only one place. It is in the SCIF, which is a secure location in the basement of the Capitol. You go down and down and down the stairs. The reporters follow you as you're going, and they stop at the door. They're not allowed to go any further in. You go through a whole series of doors. It's almost like the opening of Get Smart, walking through a whole series of doors. And then you go, there's a police officer, and you check in. You check in any electronics you have. You give them your cell phone. You give them your AirPods. You give them your Fitbit. You have no electronics at all. You go through a giant secure door, a second secure door, and you sign out any documents you're going to read. And you read them in that locked room.
Right.
And then you give them back the documents and you sign them back in, which means if you have them, I don't know how you get them short of, you remember when Bill Clinton was president, his national security advisor, Sandy Berger, who literally took classified documents from a SCIF, stuffed them down his underwear because he wanted to smuggle them out, and he wasn't very good at it. He got caught. I don't know if Joe Biden did that, but I have no idea how he got classified documents out of that SCIF. I don't know any other senator who's ever done that.
Well, wow. This leads me to another topic I want to get your take on, and that is term limits, because this is the issue when people go into Congress and are there for 30, 40, 50 years. You begin to think it's about you, and you have this unlimited power. You tweeted this week that you'd like to see a vote on term limits. I think our viewers would like that as well.
Look, absolutely. You want to talk about an issue that has widespread and bipartisan agreement. Term limits, a supermajority of Americans, more than 70% of Americans support term limits, more than 70% of Republicans, more than two-thirds of Democrats, more than two-thirds of independents. It's a massive support. There's one group that doesn't support term limits, and that is career politicians in Washington. All of the Democrats in the Senate oppose term limits, and all of the Republicans who've been there a gazillion years oppose term limits. I've introduced a constitutional amendment that would limit every senator to two terms, would limit every House member to three terms. I believe we ought to take it up and vote on it, because if we got career politicians out of Washington in both parties there would be a lot less of the corruption of the swamp that is endemic and that sadly implicates both Democrats and Republicans.
Well, will Chuck Schumer bring it to the floor?
Sadly, I don't think he will. I will keep fighting. I hope the House brings it up for a vote. We're much more likely to get a vote in the House under Kevin McCarthy. But Schumer doesn't want to vote on this because Schumer wants to stay there 1,000 years. And I think some of our Democratic colleagues have been there 1,000 years.
Yeah. Senator, thank you. And thank you for pushing so that our military gets what they are due after getting fired. And now you push to get that vaccine mandate eliminated in the military.
Yes.
We will talk soon. Thank you, sir. Senator Ted Cruz this morning.
Thanks,
in
Brad.
Texas.
Well, what an interview that was. Coming up, Judge Jeanine is talking about all hell breaking loose down in Florida when Governor DeSantis is cracking down on this school curriculum. So here we go with Judge Jeanine.
Liberals are losing their minds after getting schooled by Ron DeSantis. The College Board removing controversial woke lessons from an AP African American Studies curriculum. After the Florida governor rejected them, but progressive politicians and media figures are outraged. The College Board claims they didn't take into account any political leaders' considerations. But good old Gavin Newsom isn't buying that, tweeting, "I call BS. You are merely a puppet of Ron DeSantis." And others are lobbing personal attacks against DeSantis.
Unfortunately, you know, Governor DeSantis has been very, very clear. He has what just appears to be a white nationalist agenda.
It's never been about this course. The governor was very clear. African-American studies doesn't have educational value.
He's basically sacrificing the education of a whole generation of people.
He's trying to.
For his ambition.
It's a right-wing fantasy land, like Disney World, but in hell. Come to Florida, the meanest place on earth.
Okay. All right, I'll start with you, Greg.
That's a great slogan. I would move to the meanest place on earth.
perfect for you.
Things get done at the meanest place on earth. I don't like nice places.
All right. Is this a white nationalist agenda that's taking out black queer studies, BLM, and reparations?
No, because they're very specific about what they're looking at. They're looking at stuff like queer theory and this kind of radical Marxism stuff that tends to kind of seep into everything because it's coming out of the campuses and it's now in our high schools. I never thought it would, but it's happening. But the big story here, I think, is about education itself. It's no longer a given that left-wing agitprop can freely flow into your classroom or into your curriculum. Parents are truly woke, right? They're woke to the woke. They're not going to roll over anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you want queer theory for kids, you're going to have to fight for it. And that's what this is really about. It's not about any kind of censorship or banning. It's about, you know what? We're now reading the brainwash that you've been shooting into these books, and we don't like it. You have to defend it. We don't have to defend protecting our kids. You have to tell us why a 6-year-old needs to know about gender affirmation surgery. I want to hear that explanation, and they can't. And I just saw a statistic the other day that the number one group for homeschooling in growth are black families.
Interesting.
That is a great sign.
Yep.
Because education has got to change, because once there's a competitive element to it through school choice, it's over.
Dana, Randy Weingarten said that she assured us that critical race theory wasn't being taught in the schools, and she calls Governor DeSantis a race baiter.
Yeah, that was my first point that I was going to make, is that for years they said CRT is not even happening.
Right.
But now they're upset because it's not happening?
Yeah.
Is that what you're upset about? And this, as for Governor Newsom, he didn't even write it's BS. He wrote the full word.
No.
Yes, he did.
What did you do when you saw it, Dana?
I was outraged.
Did you wash your eyes out?
No.
Well, I did. That's all my eyes.
I just feel like he looks like he's flailing. Mm-hmm. If you have to write that in a tweet, that's not leadership. You look pretty pitiful. And it'll be funny to see if he tries to go to South Carolina to actually compete in a Democratic primary either in 24 or 28. Because I just don't think that most people are going to want to go for that kind of leadership. And it's not just because of the cursing. It's because of this, like, being unhinged. Also, the last thing I would say is this is a 70-30 issue, and they don't realize it, which is what you were just saying, is that you have more and more people choosing to try something different with their education. You have full states saying, actually, you know what, we're going to allow the dollars allowed it to each student to follow them wherever they want to go for education. That's a trend that starts in a few states, and then it starts to grow. So Republicans have a way here to try to make education something that is an issue that they can show parents they really care about. No matter what your the rest of your ideology, the kids matter. And in 2024, that election is going to be about them, I think.
You know, Jesse, notice how they infuse transgenderism with race so that if you're against it, you're not only a racist, you're homophobic. I mean, they make it so that whatever way you disagree, you're a horrible person.
Yeah, it's time saving for Jesse.
Get it all in there at once. Just call me a bad guy. This country needs more honesty. People have to give Ron DeSantis the benefit of the doubt. Like, I give Joe Biden the benefit of the doubt.
Until when?
Jesse Waters sees this story, and he says to himself, this is a governor who has now established AP African American history courses for the first time in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. That is a really good accomplishment. Mm-hmm. But the View sees this as a Klansman banning slavery being taught in schools.
Yep.
It's insane. If the College Board admits, and they did,
yep,
that the socialism, the empty the prisons, the intersectionality, whatever that means, is too much for high school kids, it's too much for high school kids. Do you remember what you were like in high school, Judge? Could you have handled queer theory as a junior?
No, I went to Catholic high school.
Exactly.
I never mention it.
Exactly.
I cut class.
The people that are complaining about this should actually maybe take AP African American Studies. They might learn something. And they cut the fat out, and now it's lean, and it's mean, and it's just history, and that's a good thing.
And just history, slavery, Reconstruction, civil rights. That's in there.
The problem is a politician is interfering with the substance of what's being taught in the school. It's fine when you like the guy. Or now DeSantis, you know, he's on a roll. Everybody's watching with admiration and wondering how far he's going to go and all the rest. What happens if he's the guy that you really think stinks? What happens if he's opposite your point of view? And here he is, and he is attacking curriculum, the province of parents and educators. Now he's inserting this political activism in the midst of it. So you say Gavin Newsom's a dope. What if Gavin Newsom was doing this? Yeah. How would we feel if Gavin Newsom was the one saying that the AP course in something else?
They have laws on the books that the legislature passed that you can't pull woke stuff off in school.
What law is that?
What do you mean, what law? They passed it. It's the anti-woke law.
You mean
in Florida. This goes against their laws in Florida.
Plus, Ron DeSantis is making a political play. He wants to be president of the United States. No. He understands what Greg was talking about, how this will impact the Democrats as they try to defend transgenderism and all the rest of it. They all know what they're doing. I know what they're doing, too.
No.
Now it's okay. It's got to be.
You know what a political play would be if Ron DeSantis criticized Gavin Newsom? It's just the opposite. That's the only political play here.
Well, we've got Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson, and they're talking about college women treating their men, or they're like little boys that they're never going to have as mothers. I mean, there are some outrageous things they're saying, but they're so interesting. They're talking about trans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson. Here we go next.
Something that marks you out from the norm, like a tilt towards autism, because a lot of the people, it was just released with the Tavistock staff. You know, the Tavistock closed down in the UK. That was the big gender surgery performing institute in the UK.
How was that closed down? What happened?
Government closed it down. So yeah, because they knew that they figured out in the UK that, wow, the rates of transgender transformation requests were skyrocketing, and even the people at the clinic knew that they were rushing people along the transformation pipeline way faster than they should have without proper clinical evaluation. There's 1,000 lawsuits out against the Tavistock in the UK now.
Wow.
1,000. Out of, I think, 30,000 transition processes.
So what is the difference between the way the UK is processing this versus the way we are?
Well, we're still where the UK was 3 or 4 years ago. We haven't woken up to the fact that, you know, all hell's going to break loose on this front with people like Chloe Cole, you know, launching lawsuits. That's the only thing that's ever going to stop this.
Lawsuits.
Lawsuits, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Or jail sentences. So, like, it's absolutely appalling. This is part of the reason that I've also part of the reason that I felt like I've been at war for like 6 months.
It's so crazy that this, what you're saying here, although it's backed by the literature, it's obvious you have an expertise in this area. This is labeled as transphobic.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
a transphobic.
Well, it's even worse than that, you know, because the data, and this was known, let's say 10 years ago before this all became an issue. Ken Zucker in Toronto, he was the world's leading authority on transgenderism. You know, he divided it into two parts. There's the autogynephilic types. Those are the guys who get sexual kicks from dressing up in women's clothing and then go do drag queen story hour. Say, well, we're just, you know, pristine and pure. It's like, no, you're not. You're getting a sexual kick from dressing up in women's clothing. And let's not bloody well forget it. And you can't even say that now, but every clinician worth his salt knew that for decades. And then there's another subpopulation. And those are usually gender nonconforming kids. And, you know, like a conservative skeptic might say there's no such thing. It's like, no, there is. So your typical gender nonconforming kid would be, this would be the perfect target for this, would be feminine boy or a masculine girl who's high in trait openness, so has kind of a mutable identity, who's also high in neuroticism. And there's lots of kids like that. And so they don't fit in that well with their peer group. You know, they're tomboy girls or feminine boys. And then if you track a lot of them, some of them develop body dysmorphia. They're not very happy with themselves at puberty because they don't fit in. But Zucker showed very clearly, he ran the transgender treatment clinic at CAMH in Toronto for decades, and he was one of the world's leading authorities in terms of publication. I think he was the editor of the lead journal for years. They just took him out in Canada, fired him and disgraced him, and he battled on the lawsuit front for like 10 years and was eventually vindicated, but he didn't have a political bone in his body. He was a clinician through and through, you know. He wasn't playing political games documenting autogynephilia. That was just clinical reality. Now it's become verboten to even suggest such a thing. Oh, there's nothing sexual about this. It's like, yeah, right. You're dressing up in lingerie before your mirror at home, tucking your dick between your legs, imagining you have a vagina for a sexual kick. Oh, there's nothing sexual about that. Yeah, right. Bloody absolute liars. Now, then you have the kids who don't fit in on the gender front. That's a different pathway. But with them, if you leave them alone, so do no harm, leave them alone. 90% of them accept their body, their sex, by age 18 or 19. And 80% of them are gay. So what that also means is, and the gay community is going to wake up to this sooner or later, is that most of the kids being sterilized and mutilated are gay. 80% of them. So I don't see how the LGBT alliance is going to hold up under that sort of reality. So, yeah, that's for sure, man.
What a crazy situation.
Yeah, and here, let's add something equally ugly to it, since we haven't gone far enough yet. So here, we'll do a little bit of arithmetic. So a while back, Disney executive mentioned on video, this is when Florida went after Disney, was all when this was happening. She came out and said, I think she was head of domestic programming for Disney. She said, well, I have two children, 5 and 7. One is trans and the other is pansexual. And I just thought mathematically right away, it's like the chance you have a trans kid is 1 in 3,000. That's not a very high chance. And let's say the chance that you have a pansexual kid is the same, whatever pansexual means. I don't even know how to calculate those odds. But whatever that is rarer than trans because no one ever even heard about it until 5 years ago. So the joint probability that you have a trans kid and a pansexual kid is 1 in 9 million. The odds that you're a pathological narcissist sacrificing your own children to the glorification of your compassion is 8,999,999 to 1. So, like, do you have a trans kid and a pansexual kid, or are you a devouring mother? Well, you can look at the odds and decide for yourself.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oof. No kidding. Look, man, Freud was no dummy. When he pointed to the fact that the devouring mother was one of the major impediments to proper human development, he knew that, looking deep into the darkest families and seeing this proclivity of the overprotective mother to destroy the developing integrity of the child to keep the child infantile, to cling to that relationship instead of developing life for herself and letting the child go flourish. That's Hansel and Gretel, right?
Mm.
You're lost in the woods. Why? Well, your family's broken up. And you have an evil stepmother. So now you're lost in the woods. What's your abuse rate if you have a step-parent? 100 times normal. So you're lost in the woods. Well, what happens? Well, you come across a gingerbread house. Well, that's pretty damn convenient. You need a house. It's a little, it's more than you could even hope for. It's not just a house. It's a house made out of candy. Well, what's inside a house made out of candy? A witch who wants to fatten you up and eat you. And that's the devouring mother. You know, and that's an old fairy tale. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and so, you know, we could dwell on that for a minute, too. One of the things we won't honestly discuss in our society, one of many, is the fundamental nature of female political psychopathology. You know, and there's male political psychopathology, obviously. That's what the feminists complain about all the time when they talk about the oppressive patriarchy, you know, toxic masculinity. There's no shortage of toxic masculinity. So is there any toxic femininity? Well, not if the feminine is just the, you know, oppressed virgin goddess whose nature. But how about we don't live in that fantasy world? And we note, yeah, there's female political pathology, the tendency to infantilize everyone, and the tendency to assume that everyone who doesn't go along with the infantilization is properly characterized as a predator. And so, you know, you wonder why are the universities turning into extended daycares? Well, a lot of the reason for that is that women who don't have anything better to do are turning the university students into the infants they never had.
Yeah, he just said it. Joy Peterson said that women are turning the universities into extended daycare and treating the men like infants that they never had. Boy, that is wakeful, isn't it? Kate Daly, we're going to end up the program this evening. He's interviewing Aman Jabi, and he's an expert on high technology, facial recognition, and a myriad of plethora of other insights that dovetail into the facial recognition technology. So here we go with Kate Daly and Aman Jabi. Here we go next.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm Kate Daly from katedalyradio.com. I am so glad you're listening in right now, because you need to listen to this hour. I can't express that enough. This hour is going to tell you what is coming in the parts and the pieces that you need to understand, how they're developing this country with tech, with facial recognition, with geofencing, all of that. You're gonna understand this by the end of this hour with my guest, computer scientist and veteran Silicon Valley camera and image specialist, Aman Jabi. And hopefully you're going to get sort of the takeaways of the Great Reset surveillance strategies that are underway right now. And he is going to be talking about the vaccine passport, the digital identity, how social credit system is actually being built here in the West, and then, of course, central bank digital currency. We might get into all of that. Who knows how far we'll go. And I also just want to say thank you to Aman for coming on and talking about this. Welcome, Aman Jabi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Kate. How are you?
Absolutely. You know, you have been one of the most instrumental people in putting in the camera imaging into the cell phones. And it correct me if I'm wrong, but this is why you're talking out about this, why you're talking about where this technology leads us. This technology that's been developed in the camera phones is very, very interesting and fascinating when it comes to the overall kind of scope of what's happening right now, facial recognition and all the rest. Why are you speaking out? What prompted you to speak out and tell people exactly what's going on with this?
I think at a very high level, I'm a lover of freedom and liberty. And whenever I see that being infringed, you know, I speak up. And given the fact that I came from Silicon Valley and I developed and help develop a lot of the tech that's being used, unfortunately, now for surveillance, even though I was working on consumer electronics, I started to connect the dots over the years. And then when COVID was announced, everything, you know, all the entire big picture came, you know, and fitted in perfectly. And so as a result of which, you know, it was my, it has to be done. The information needs to be shared with the world so that the world can, you know, act accordingly.
For sure. So let's dive in. When you're talking, you give presentations all over the country about this. And let me say, there's we hear all the buzzwords: vaccine passport, digital identity, social credit system, obviously the central bank digital currency. Where do you want to start? What do you want people to understand first about what is coming and how they do it?
I think let's start from the fact that what people can actually see with their eyes. And
okay.
I was in China in 2019 fall. For an optical, international optics conference. And I was shocked. This was in Shenzhen, which is kind of one of the ultimate smart cities that has already been built. I was shocked at the amount of surveillance infrastructure that was already in place. And people were getting tracked in real time with all sorts of cameras, both, you know, license plate readers, face recognition cameras, infrared cameras, and so much more. And this was at intersections on their roads when they were driving, whether they were entering a building, inside conference rooms, everywhere. So it kind of dawned on me that I had started to see some of that in U.S. airports over the years, especially since 9/11. And then so my antennas went up when I returned to America, and I was extremely fine-tuned to seeing any infrastructure going up. And, of course, you know, with the 5G microwave towers coming up and things starting to look ugly, I started to, you know, connect more dots on how the camera infrastructure is going to be expanded. They're going to collect data. This is much more than surveillance. So people should know that whenever a camera goes up, it's not for your safety or your security. It is to collect data on every human being, every object, every automobile, every activity in the world. So they're putting up these cameras as an all-seeing eye. And so I think that's where people should start to look within their neighborhoods, within at intersections when they're driving. And look at all the major retailers. Every single major retail store, from Walmart to Target to, you know, Home Depot, they've started to put cameras. They're tracking you throughout the store, and they're collecting data on you and what you're buying. And your carbon credits are being updated in real time. You're not being told that, but that system has already started. So I think the surveillance infrastructure of data collection is the first thing people need to understand. And then I can move to a concept called smart cities. So what they are building, and this is when I say they, this whole agenda is coming from the United Nations. The United Nations, in the name of climate action and climate change, they have something called the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And it's really important that, you know, people educate themselves on the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. They sound really cute. They sound innocuous and good for the planet, but they use inversion language. And they're using the SDGs, or the Sustainable Development Goals, in order to implement a smart city agenda, where at the high level, the smart cities are about collecting data for optimal efficiency of movement and people within cities, to keep them safe and secure, to provide them with optimal energy, to keep people from being hungry, etc., etc. But really, these smart cities with the cameras, sensors, LED lights, and microwave towers are all interconnected as part of a 5G and 6G platform, where a smart city is really an invisible concentration camp for those who cannot see the cameras. And for those who choose to see the cameras and the infrastructure, it's not invisible at all. So these smart cities are really human containment zones or concentration camps. And they've already started to have discussions in many, many parts of the world, particularly in UK, Canada, and Australia, about 15-minute cities. So the goal is to limit the movement of people to 15 minutes from where they live. And anytime you want to go beyond that, you have to take permission. And in Oxford in UK, they introduced the 15-minute cities, which they plan to put into effect in 2024. And you are only allowed to leave your district twice a week. And even for leaving your district twice a week, you have to get a permission. So that's where we are going with the surveillance and data collection infrastructure, which is going to be really a smart city infrastructure, which are going to be prison camps. The people should understand all the chaos that they're doing with the prison system and about the social justice for prisoners or prison reform that they've been talking about for years. And it has nothing to do with prison reform. They want to release all the prisoners, put them into smart cities, and then make every human being a prisoner in smart cities. All jails and prisons will be closed in a few quarters. So this is where the agenda is going with smart cities.
Yes. In fact, in my state, people might not realize this, but just Google your state and 15-minute city. They already started building one of these in our city. And ironically enough, they moved a prison, took the property, and then now they started building it in my state of Utah. I mean, we have a complete Nimrod governor who licks Biden's boots any chance he gets. And so this 15-minute city is going in, and this might be going on in your state too, wherever you're listening to this show from. So realize that we're seeing the cities play out in real time that are ahead of the game and already implemented, but there are ones being built all over the place, correct?
That's right. Every country in the world is implementing it, some faster than others. Pretty much every city will eventually build it. It's very easy to go and Google and get the list of all the cities that have already signed up to be smart cities, and they're getting tons and tons of infrastructure money from the feds, and it's being printed, and essentially the currency is being diluted in order to build our own prison camps and also destroy the currency for every central bank in the world. And in the next phase, I will link up smart cities to your face and your digital ID and to the central bank in digital currency.
Wow, and that's where the camera technology that Aman worked on is leading us to. And I also wanted to say these cameras went up, the 5G towers went up with right in the middle of the Blovid fake COVID pandemic because, of course, we were preoccupied with it. And so it seems, they always want a dual thing coming in so that we are preoccupied, don't fight the cameras, don't see what's going on. And even in your state of Montana, you saw all of these new lights go up on the highways, camera systems. We'll be right back on the Alex Jones Show. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm Kate Daly from katedalyradio.com. I have a special guest in this hour. You really need to pay attention because all that's being talked about, these are the steps being implemented right now. And it's not some futuristic thing. It is now. In fact, let's talk about facial recognition technology with my guest, Aman Jabi, who is a computer scientist and veteran Silicon Valley camera and image specialist on the Great Reset surveillance strategies. Let's talk facial recognition, Aman.
Yeah, so I just finished talking about, the smart cities and the infrastructure. Before I talk about facial recognition, I want to introduce a concept called the digital identity or the digital ID. And I read about it in a 2018 World Economic Forum paper. And for those who are not familiar with the World Economic Forum, it's a private corporation, just like the United Nations. They published a paper on the digital ID where they said that this is a new social contract in the chapter of the world. It's a social contract that nobody has asked for and nobody signed up for, but they want to plant a digital ID on everything, every object, every person in the world. And this digital ID is going to be linked to your biometrics and specifically your face. So in order to access things in life in the future, once the digital ID system comes into play, you will need your face or biometrics